This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of IP in a Pod. I'm Charlotte Julie, Head of Brand Protection, and I'm joined by my colleague, Peter Bird.
Hello.
Peter, I read a recent article you published about brand audits, and I thought this would be an interesting area to explore in a podcast. I'm a big fan of health checks or audits for brands or trademarks, because I think they're the core of almost every business, but are often neglected. And by brands, I of course mean any sort of sign that is used to identify goods or services, which can be both registered or unregistered. And I thought it'd be useful to start off by perhaps you giving us your thoughts on why a brand audit could be an important thing to do.
Yes, I think you're completely right. Brand audits, you know, the brand is often the most valuable part of a business. And often the care of the brand itself becomes a secondary priority, you know, for lots of very understandable reasons. But actually, like anything else, if you don't look after the health of the brand, then you can get into a lot of difficulty. And here I really mean there's lots of difficulties you can get into, but I think the one that probably speaks to most business owners and managers is valuation. If you don't stop competitors from encroaching on your brand space, if you don't stop people ripping off, counterfeiting, etc., then the value that you have in your brand is going to be heavily diluted. And we can come on to a couple of things as we go through this article. So the other thing is that your reputation can be tarnished if you allow third parties trade with perhaps a similar name to you and sell substandard goods or provide substandard services. Then then people might associate that with you, and that's going to affect your name. And then also from a consumer protection point of view, you know, but most brands these days do care a lot about their customers. And if you're allowing your customers to be confused, or if your inaction is allowing your customers to be confused into buying products that aren't yours, thinking that they are, then there's quite serious ramifications for your brand and for consumer loyalty there.
Thanks, Peter. I think it would be helpful to run through a few of the key things to think about in a brand audit. So I wondered if you'd mind giving me your thoughts about things to consider, for example, whether all brands and sub-brands are registered and whether they are registered in respect of the correct goods and services in the correct territories.
Yeah, so here we're really talking about trademarks, and trademarks are probably the most valuable tool in your brand protection arsenal, not least because they last forever, and you can use them to prevent quite a wide number of activities that you don't want other people to be doing. But one thing, I mean, most companies these days are quite good at protecting what you might call your house mark, your company name, your brand, your sort of key head brand. But what a lot of people neglect is sub-brands. And you don't necessarily have to, people don't always appreciate that a trademark can be a variety of things. It can be, you know, an advertising slogan, it can be a colour, it can be a shape, anything that consumers would use to identify you as the originator of the products or services in question. So it's always worth, even if you have trademark protection, regularly look through all of the things that you may think indicate you as the originator of your products or services, and make sure, or at least consider, whether protection in those things is appropriate. It's sometimes harder, you know, protecting a colour in the UK is pretty hard, but sometimes it could be worth it. The other thing to think about as well is the specifications that you have. When you file a trademark, you file in respect of certain products and services, and if you over time expand beyond the original products and services that you envisaged, you may not have protection for these new products that you're bringing out. So again, when you go through to check that all of your marks are registered correctly, check what products and services they're registered for.
I think that's an interesting point, because most, if not all, businesses evolve over time, but in the current climate with the pandemic, a large number of businesses seem to be offering different goods or services. And if they're going to carry on doing that when things return to closer to normality, then I suppose that might be something to consider in a brand audit as well, whether those new activities are covered.
Yes, definitely. And I think an ancillary point there, which is not necessarily to do with audits, but check that in doing that, you're not infringing anyone else's right. You know, doing clearance searching. I know that it's not always on the forefront of people's minds, but just checking what's out there before you bring out these new products is quite important too.
I find I get quite a lot of questions from clients, particularly at the time of renewal, about whether their current trademark covers the one that they actually use, because particularly for logos, it's evolved, perhaps colour change, perhaps a slight change to the picture element present. So I think perhaps at renewal it's a little bit, you know, late in the day, not necessarily, but, you know, normally the changes happen sometime before that. So I would imagine part of the brand audit would be to look at the actual mark and whether that mark is in use or if it's a different variant that's been adopted.
Yeah, and as you say, it's generally logos that this falls under. People are quite, businesses quite often like to update and change their logos, and they don't necessarily appreciate that if they don't change the registered protection that they have in their logos, firstly, they can lose the protection that they already have because of the requirement to use your trademark. And secondly, they might not have the same level of protection as they thought they did because they're using a different logo.
And I think that comes on nicely to another issue to consider, that not only is there perhaps a problem if you're not using the mark as registered, but you also need to police your brand to make sure it's not going to be revoked for another reason, such as it's become generic.
Yes. Yeah. And then this is, you know, to give some examples of this, the word escalator and the word trampoline used to be protected brands. And in a way, those companies have become so successful that everyone calls their products after those brand names. Their products have become the name in the market. But actually, they lose their ability to protect that then because they've become generic. And then you lose your trademarks. So you really need to be watching out for this. You know, you shouldn't be using it as a verb. You should be saying, you know, putting the TM after it, or if it's registered, put this last symbol after it. Make sure people aren't, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to Google that. That is genericizing Google's brand because you're using it as a verb. And then the second thing also to think about here is, when not necessarily generic use, but if you're using something in a misleading way or allowing someone else to use it in a misleading way, then that's also a problem. So you do really need to keep an eye on how the brand is used, both by you, but also by consumers, these retailers, and make sure that you're really on top of these issues.
And I think that comes to a point, the sort of, you know, good record keeping about how you've used it and having that sort of education internally to make sure that all your employees know how to use a brand, that they use it correctly, and they keep detailed, dated evidence of how it was used and where it's been used.
Yes, definitely. I think a good example of this, I don't know whether this is a true story, but someone told me this recently, that they were in coffee and they asked for a Frappuccino. The barista said, actually, a Frappuccino is a trademark of Starbucks. So we don't sell Frappuccinos, but we sell, you know, an iced coffee or a coffee cooler or something. And that's classic use. That's classic educating your employees on the importance of the brand significance. That one was even more impressive because it was employees of a different company protecting the brand.
I think that's a very sensible strategy, and it's good to hear that at least some companies are employing that. Yeah. I think one of the other issues that I come across quite a lot is that trademarks might initially be filed by one entity, and then a new company is created and new trademarks are filed in that name, and you end up having to do an assignment or some other transaction, maybe even an opposition, and you realise you've got half a dozen trademarks in the name of different parties, which can be a little bit messy and actually quite time consuming and costly when you need to do something to try and get everything into common ownership.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely something that I see a lot. And as you say, it usually only comes to light when you need to do something like enforce the trademark. I've had a few instances recently where at the, or shortly before the deadline for an opposition, say, we've had rights in several different entities and we've had to file 5 or 6 different oppositions to a trademark, which obviously is 5 or 6 times the cost for the brand owners. There's also an issue there with unregistered rights. Goodwill in the UK attaches to the use of a brand. And if a parent company or a holding company owns a registered trademark, but a subsidiary or a sister company uses, or even another company that's not wholly connected, uses the brand, they're the actual user of the brand, then the goodwill will probably accrue to that company who's using it. And so again, if you want to try and enforce the brand, you've got one company owning the trademarks, one company owning the goodwills, and it just gets quite messy. So something to really think about is how you structure your company. And there's lots of reasons beyond brand protection for having different sets of corporate structures. So I'm not saying, for instance, that you should only think about your trademarks when you're doing this. But, you know, if you're not holding it all in the same entity, think about having a licensing structure in place just so that it's all quite tidy and neat, so that when you need to use it, especially, you know, if you're, so an opposition is one thing, but it's, say you're faced with filing an interim injunction and someone's about to rip off your brand or cause you damage in a huge way and you need to get it done and filed straight away. You don't really want to be spending time worrying about licensing arrangements and internal structures when you really need to be focusing on getting, you know, the court action up and running.
Thanks, Peter. I think as well as thinking about the sort of core trademarks in a brand audit, there are other types of IP that should be considered, and copyright and designs are two elements which could be podcasts in their own right. There's a huge amount of material, and in fact we've produced podcasts about copyright and material and ownership, but I just thought it was worth touching on those in a brand protection sense, that logos, for example, might have copyright protection attached to them, and dealing with ownership of that, and also designs. I just wondered if there were any sort of key points that you wanted to raise under copyright or designs to think about in that sort of brand logo protection sphere.
Absolutely. In terms of the logo, I think the key thing to think about is ownership. People don't always understand that the position of law in copyright is that, and in design rights, in fact, is that the person who creates the work, the logo, is the owner, unless they're an employee or unless there's some legal agreement in place. And I've certainly tried to enforce brand rights in the past and tried to rely on copyright where we're not quite sure who owns the copyright, and it's 10 years down the line and we can't remember who actually created the work in question, and we had to do quite a time-consuming and expensive exercise of tracking down and making sure we had a confirmatory assignment. So again, if you are conducting a brand audit, make sure that the things that you have got protection in, and copyright can be much wider than logos, of course. It can be photographs, product designs, diagrams, videos, you know, adverts, jingles, but make sure that you own those, because if you want to stop someone else from infringing those, you need to make sure that you've got the rights in the first place.
I've certainly come across that, where clients have paid a design agency to create a logo, and because they paid them, you know, quite a substantial sum of money, they think they own that design, and it turns out that they don't. And it's certainly better to get that in order during an audit, you know, when you come across it and you realise that there are gaps in the chain of title, and making sure you take ownership at that point, rather than if there are proceedings and it's a sort of last minute panic to try and get your house in order.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think record keeping, we've already touched on this, but record keeping, certainly in the context of copyright, unregistered design right, you need to know when that design or when that work was made, who it was made by. The more information you have on that and keep in a bank somewhere, the better.
And I think as well as making sure you've got all those records and your IP is in good shape, that's only half the battle. And what you need to keep doing after that is is monitoring and enforcing it. If you're going to have these rights, if you're going to spend time and money creating trademarks, logos, whatever it may be, and that's the shop window effectively to your business, that's what your consumers see and come to know and love, then you've got to make sure you're proactive. So I'd suggest monitoring and enforcement should follow or be part of any brand audit. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that, Peter.
Yes, well, I think there's lots of things you can do to monitor your brand. And it's the old adage is there's no point in having a trademark or another IP right if you're not going to enforce it. And as I say, there's several things that you can do. I think one of the most sort of basic and the easiest thing you can do is have a trademark watching service in place, which you'd usually do through your lawyer. And we do this for most of our clients. And we get reports of all of the territories that they're interested in. If someone is filing a trademark that might cause issues, we get a report of it, we can look at it, we can deal with it, and we can see how we go forward. Now, that's not always comprehensive, because actually a trademark is just what's on the register and not what's happening in the market. But it's firstly a very good way of identifying the intentions of people out there. And people may not, a lot of trademark disputes are people who genuinely didn't know about your brand or genuinely didn't think that what they were doing was going to be a problem for you. And quite a lot of trademark disputes that arise out of these watching services are relatively quickly and easily solved at a stage before it becomes a problem, i.e. before the other side start really making significant use of the brand. You might not be aware of them until 2 or 3 years down the line if you didn't have the watching service. And then there's incentive for them to fight you if you ask them to change, because they've built up their own brand. As I say, that's not the whole picture. There's a lot of other services out there for monitoring what's actually happening in the marketplace. And this is probably more relevant for people who sell physical goods, but keeping an eye on, you know, the online platforms, the, you know, Amazon searches, eBay searches, that kind of thing, and reporting the kind of infringements that you don't want to be seeing. And that's often counterfeit goods or you know, actual rip-off goods.
Thank you, Peter. I think we've covered a lot of material already in this podcast, and your article is an excellent resource if people want more detailed thoughts about brand audits. But I feel that almost any and every podcast at the moment needs to touch on our favourite subject, which is Brexit, or the Brexit transition period that we are currently in. And I wondered if there were any things that we might want to consider in this sort of brand audit context in light of Brexit.
Yes, I think the key thing to think about in terms of Brexit is pending applications for trademarks and for designs, and indeed if you want to make an application for any protection in across the EU, including the UK, because the position is at the moment at the end of the transition period, which is the end of this year. Any registered EU rights, be it trademarks or designs, are going to be cloned onto the UK register automatically. But if there's pending applications, this will not happen and you'll have to refile. So there's an added cost involved. So we are probably just about now in time. If you file an EU application now, you probably will get it through before the end of the year if there's no problems. But we're running out of time drastically. So if you want to sort of save on some filing fees, it's a good time now to, having conducted your brand audit, file your EU trademarks. But it's also worth looking at whether any rights are likely to be pending at the end of the year and whether we need to take any action about those now.
I think also just to remind people that any domain names such as .eus, they might need to consider ownership of those, because a UK entity probably won't be able to hold that domain name once the transition period is over. Thank you very much, Peter. I think there's lots of things to think about and reinforces the fact that a brand is very important. It's often the majority of the value of a business and needs to be given time and consideration to make sure it's adequately protected.
Yeah, these things are really, really important.
Well, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.